Those of you who read the UU World magazine may recognize this piece from January. It's entitled, Let's Get Started Together, and it's by Doug Mooter. People who have never been Unitarian Universalists often ask me why we bother with the whole church thing. Buildings and ministers are expensive. Committees and classes and Sunday services are time-consuming. And for what? Our churches don't promise to take us to heaven. At the end of the day, we're going to make up our own minds about the big questions anyway, and choose a path through life according to our own consciences. So what's the point? Sometimes UUs respond that we're looking for community, an answer which, in my experience, has never impressed anybody. People join other religions to fight the cosmic battle between good and evil, or to keep the devil within them at bay. By contrast, community makes it sound like UUs are looking for a fourth for bridge. Sometimes we are. And there's nothing wrong with that. But these last few months have brought home just what our kind of community means and what it is for. A Unitarian Universalist church is not just a community of interests or tastes or people who happen to get along. It's a community of values. The UU principles are not a list of opinions about the cosmic order or the nature of God or the afterlife. They are visionary statements describing the world we are trying to bring into existence. A world where all people are valued, are free to find truth for themselves, and live in harmony with the world around them, to mention a few. At times, this last election seemed like a referendum on those values. Should we pursue a world community with justice for all? Or put America first, regardless of justice? Should those of us who are white, or male, or straight, or economically secure, or English-speaking, or native-born, or able, care about those who lack our privileges? Or is that very concern the political correctness that is ruining America? Most disturbing of all, open white supremacy was back on the public agenda, as if racists were just another constituency. Even if no candidate officially embraced its vision of white ethno-state, the alt-right movement was not treated as toxic. Its memes could be shared and retweeted. Its allies could take prominent roles in the campaign. And if its open endorsements were still disavowed, they were sloughed off casually rather than shaken off in horror. My gay and lesbian friends are worried, and some are afraid. Are their hard-won rights secure? How much discrimination against them will be legalized under the guise of religious liberty? Even more immediately, Hispanics and Muslims are concerned about their physical safety. And those who have been asking whether Black Lives Matter might well interpret the election as an answer. No, they don't. At times like this, community means a lot more than just people who you can make small talk with or a place to hold social events. On the weekend after the election, I was leading the Sunday service at the Unitarian Church of Quincy, Illinois, the town where I grew up. But I haven't lived for many years. Adams County had voted 3-1 for Trump, and the local Unitarians were feeling not just defeated, but encircled. To them, the voters who had rejected their values were not some abstract demographic like the white working class. They were the neighbors. Church was well attended that morning. I think the members just needed to be together, to look each other in the eye, and to know that they were not alone. We read number 594 in the hymnal, the responsive reading that lists the UU principles. It felt good to say them out loud and hear others say them too. No, we implicitly assured each other we are not going to fall into despair. We are not going to retreat into our individual homes and hide or hibernate until some future time when, we hope, the dangers have passed. If we were alone, fear and discouragement might overwhelm us, and those options might seem irresistible. But we are not alone. Have our countrymen forgotten why these values are important? Have issues we thought were closed forever come open again? Do we have to go back and make our case all over again from the beginning? Very well, then. Let's get started together. Why are we a congregation? This is why.
The title of the sermon this morning is For Such a Time as This. Sounds kind of old-fashioned, doesn't it? The editor on my Word program kept wanting me to change it to something a little more succinct, take out a couple of extra words. But the title, For Such a Time as This, comes from the book of Esther in the Hebrew Scriptures. Some of you may be familiar with the book of Esther. It's one of the little, what they're called, novellas, roughly historically placed, but a story that's intended to instruct and teach something about the experience of the Jewish people, in particularly the Jews that were left behind in Persia. The Persian Empire had enslaved the Jews and brought them into their communities and then eventually let them go back to Jerusalem. But many of them remained behind. And this is a story of that diaspora that remained behind in Persia. And this is the story of Esther, a beautiful young Jewish girl who happened to be in the right place at the right time when the king was looking to replace his queen. And the king's representatives were looking for a beautiful young woman, and Esther happened upon their way. Now, when it became a possibility for Esther to become queen, her uncle, who had raised her, her uncle Mordecai, told her, "Don't tell them you're Jewish. If you want to have a chance at this, don't tell them that you're Jewish." And so she hid her Jewishness and ultimately became the queen of this large empire, living in her palace of privilege and luxury and beauty. Until one day, her uncle got in trouble with one of the king's important men, refused to bow down to him. And this representative of the king, Haman, was very offended. He was so offended that he went to the king and convinced the king to pay a group of mercenaries to kill all the Jews in the Persian kingdom, to make a point about how important it was to bow down when told to do so. Now, Esther's uncle Mordecai sent her a note to tell her what was going on, and one of the palace stewards brought this note to Esther. Esther was really troubled by this news, but also aware that she couldn't go to the king without being first called by him, that she would risk death if she tried to have an audience with the king that he hadn't initiated himself. The king could indeed have her killed if she tried to have an audience with him. Now you can imagine the challenge that she was facing. And then she got another note from her uncle. And this note said, and I'm going to quote from the scripture here, "For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. But you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this. He's really calling her out, isn't it? Calling her to use the power and privilege that she had as the queen on behalf of the vulnerable, behalf of her own community, to rise above her fears, to find her best self. He said, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. That's because the bulk of the Jews had gone back to Jerusalem. But all of those that were still in the Persian Empire were to be killed. If Esther remained silent, thousands of Jews would be killed. A tough choice for her: protect her life or save her people. She was called to speak up on behalf of her faith, called to speak up, to risk her life because of this possible injustice, and called to use her privilege. So what about us? How does this story resonate for us? Are we called to use our privilege for such a time as this? We could let deliverance come from another place. We could let our despair overwhelm us, our powerlessness take over. But we are called for such a time as this, as individuals of faith, as Unitarian Universalists, perhaps for many of us, called in a way that we have never have been in our lifetimes. But the important point that I want to make here on this morning is the difference between us and Esther, isolated and alone in her luxurious palace. She had to find her best self on her own. She was not part of the Unitarian Universalist Society of Sacramento. But you are. You are not alone and isolated. In reflecting on the theme for this morning, I realized our mission statement is the perfect statement for such a time as this. We come together to deepen our lives and be a force for healing in the world. I like the first part. We come together. That's a pretty powerful statement, right? Thinking of the reading, Doug Mooder's point, we don't come together because we think it's going to get us into heaven or redeem us from sin. We come together with no guarantees, except I hope you'll be welcomed and supported and loved. We come together. Many of us have been coming together for years. Some of you have come just today. Nobody requires any of us to be here. In fact, we're kind of countercultural in the first place being here, because church is not the most common place to be on Sunday morning anymore, but we come together. So I want to tell you a secret, a minister's secret, something that I didn't appreciate before I became a minister and have come to fully appreciate in my past few years with you. Ministers fall in love with their congregations. You have to. The work is too hard, too intimate, too all-consuming to keep yourself separate. You have to fully love the congregation. I love this congregation. I love each and every one of you. And I love you because you show up. I love you because you sustain this church community, because you care and you try and you commit to our values to make the world a better place. I love the members who were born into this congregation. I love the people that have been here for many years. And I love the people who have just come in the last few months. the people who took the risk to say, I want to find a community, I want to find a place. We come together to deepen our lives. I would say, for such a time as this, we need to deepen our lives more than ever. This is the place where we build resilience, where we get that soul food that allows us to live our values out in the world. So many ways this congregation helps deepen our lives. We're starting a resilience gathering next month, a place to come together, lament and hope and wish and sing and pray and light candles. So many of our programs, the spiritual deepening circles, our spiritual practices, the Gen X, Gen Y book readers, all coming together to deepen our lives by sharing what's on our hearts and our minds, building community and taking care of each other. Oh, yes, and Bridge is Monday afternoons at 1. All are welcome. We come together to deepen our lives and be a force for healing in the world. Just like Esther, who had to reveal her faith to the king, it's time for us to reveal our faith to the world. Our mission calls us to be a force for healing in the world, and as you use, we can't continue to stay quiet about who we are and what we believe. Our faith calls us to create a world where all people are valued, are free to find the truth for themselves, and live in harmony with the world around them. But here, I think, is the most radical thing of all. This church thing that we do on Sunday mornings and 7 days a week. The most radical thing of all is that we make this happen by our stewardship, by our time and our talent and what I like to call our treasure. There's no grant funding from any foundation that supports us, no money that comes from headquarters in Boston that helps pay our rent. We do it all ourselves with our time and our money and our love and our commitment. And every year around this time, we ask you to renew your commitment to the congregation. Some churches are trying to get away from the every year cycle of the pledge drive, and believe me, I truly appreciate that. It's a lot of work, and our stewardship team has been working very hard. But I think asking again every year requires us all to reflect on what this congregation means to us. And at such a time as this, to reflect on what this congregation can mean for the community at large. And also what this congregation can mean to the people who aren't here yet. People who are looking for a place of encouragement and refuge, places to build resilience, newcomers who are called to our mission, even though they might have just heard it today, or those who haven't even heard it yet. At our monthly newcomer orientation, we ask people to say, what brought you to church? Why are you here? And many people can't really articulate what they're looking for, but they tell us that they found it when they came here. They found it because we were all here to make it here to find. So these newcomers are coming. You may have noticed in the parking lot. You may have noticed in our sanctuary, attendance is up. We had double the number of visitors so far this year and the same time as last year, which tells me that now more than ever, we need to be a strong presence for people who are looking for what we have to offer. Someone asked me earlier, who's this? on the cover of the Order of Service. Who's this? Eric Jensen and L. Harlow, two of our amazing youth that we grew into who they are. Now, okay, their parents get a little credit for it. But we created this wonderful community of love and care where all our children were valued. And at such a time as this, I want to ask you what this church means for our children. I want to ask you what your commitment is to our children. If you take the long view, there is no more profound impact than we have than the work that we do with our children. Our religious education attendance is up 20% over last year. We've had 5 new families join us just in the past few months. These are parents that are trusting us with their children. Through sharing our values with these families and with these children, we can show them that the world is more than a shallow, unethical, narcissistic, and individualistic place. We can show them that people come together. They contribute and they make this place happen. We can teach by example that bullying is never okay. Teach them healthy sexuality and forms of gender expression. Offer them a place to safely develop their true potential. Show them what kindness and loving community looks like. We're in our 3rd year now of our all-ages services. We had 34 children at the service last Sunday. They were bouncing around, chatting, coloring chalice cards in the corner, engaging in the ritual with their parents and siblings, making this space holy with their presence. And they were collecting the offering. When I proposed the idea of the kids collecting the offering, I had no idea how much I would love it. I see the kids bringing the baskets around, missing the rows. I see them wandering off in the wrong direction, but I see them focused and engaged. And when they're coming forward with the baskets from the back, this look of pride on their faces, this I'm in a role, the role that makes a difference, it opens my heart. Now, do you think that they understand what the offering is about? That it represents a collection to support this church and its mission? Do you think that they appreciate the values and the commitment of this community? Of course they do. You can see it in their faces, in their sense of safety and love. You can see how they feel inspired and challenged and valued. An investment in the church is an investment in our children, an investment in our future, and the future of our world. We must renew our commitment to this congregation for all these reasons, and most especially for our children. For such a time as this, for such a time when who we are and what we do and the values that we live out in this world have never been more important. Thank you for your gifts over the years, and thank you for the gifts that you will continue to bring to sustain the life of this congregation. Blessed be.